welcome to another special episode of Brutal Battle. This one we will be calling the Brewmore Baltimore Documentary Review episode, because as everyone who listens to all the episodes knows, we had the guys from Digital Cave Media on because they made a film called Brewmore Baltimore, which is about the history of brewing in Baltimore and some of the breweries that are currently operating in Baltimore. And we had gone to that documentary showing. It was a big event, and we wanted to do an episode that would be a nice review of the film to say a little bit about all the people involved brewery-wise and the overall tone of the film and, you know, some of the tidbits we got from it. So I will say that we are, as per the norm, trying beers while we're talking. There were four breweries highlighted within the film. One was Union Brewing. One was Heavy Seas. Then we had Stillwater Artisanal Ales and Brewer's Art. So we will be trying one beer from each of those breweries. We'll talk about those, try them, talk about the flavors, the aromas, all that kind of good stuff. And we'll intermingle actual talk about the film. As per the norm for special episodes like this, Rebecca is with me.
Hi.
So, are you excited to drink some
beer? I'm excited. I was wondering when you were going to introduce me, because you kept saying we. I'm like, I bet they're like all the listeners on the edge of the seat wondering who the other part of you is tonight.
Well, because it could have been Sean Creel, because...
Yes, he came with us.
Yes, we were able to sneak him in. We snuck him in the back door.
No, we didn't. He had a ticket.
Yeah, we were able to negotiate a ticket for Sean Creel from Brewkeep. So that was a lot of fun. The actual event, I don't know, how did you feel about the actual event when we got there?
I knew it was going to be, well, first of all, it was at MICA, mm-hmm. which people may or may not be familiar with MICA. It's the Maryland Institute of College for the Arts.
Yes.
So exactly what it stands for.
In Baltimore.
Baltimore. And we've been there for other events before, Carlin and I. So it's in this really, really neat, impressive building from the outside, like glass, very, some hard angles. It's just an interesting structure. So I was interested to see, again, what it was like on the inside because it had been a long time since I was there. But walking in, there was just tons of people.
Yeah, it was packed. It did sell out.
Right, it did.
Which
and,
was great.
I mean, it was a lot of people when we got there early and there were a lot of people and then it just got even more packed.
Yeah.
So.
And, you know, when we went in, we, you know, had to go to the will call to, well, we were on the guest list. So we had to go to the guest list and everybody got three drink tickets because mm-hmm. they were actually serving beer before the screening. And everybody gets three drink tickets. So you're thinking with a lot of these things, when you get three drink tickets, it's like three pours. So you get like a portion of a beer basically. No, it was
three
full beers per person. So either a bottle or a can, you know.
Yeah.
They had a few offerings from all of the breweries, except actually Stillwater. Stillwater only had one offering, was the Classique, and that's the only beer that I drank when I was there. It was like nice and light saison. But we'll talk more about that kind of stuff when we get there. But they had food there as well.
Yeah, I didn't really go. I didn't even really meander over to the food. We had already eaten. I didn't know there was going to be food there. I just thought it was going to be.
Yeah, beer. I thought it was just going to be beer. I didn't know they were going to have music. They had live music as well. The guy who did some music for the documentary was there performing, which was really cool. Everything I think went well with the screening. The only kind of hiccup was when everyone was supposed to start going into the theater and they were being stopped because they were saying, oh yeah, you can't bring beers in with you. People were trying to bring their beers in. So then you had people standing there trying to like chug them down real fast. And they were like, okay. You did have some people who still were able to sneak some by that were unopened, because as the film started, you heard, you know, the unmistakable sound of someone, you know, popping a can open or...
Which, you know, whatever. People are going to break the rules. But then I felt bad because people were, like, spilling beer, and there were definite, like, people, like, glass bottles you could hear rolling.
Yeah, at one point someone got up in the middle of it to, I assume, go to the bathroom, and you hear just all these bottles get knocked over, and they're, like, rolling, which was, you know.
So I just feel bad for people who have to clean that up because people can't follow the rules.
I personally wish that everyone would have honored what they were supposed to and not take open containers in there, because I mean, you know, that's on the people putting on
the event. It looks bad for them.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's not cool. But anyway, it was a good film. I'm going to be honest, there was a lot more information historically than I thought there was going to be. But
it was interesting.
No, you know, it was like it was beyond interesting. Yeah. Like, I thought it was great. I loved the film for that reason. Mm-hmm. And honestly, that was the main portion of it. Mm-hmm. I actually thought it would mainly be about, like, the state of...
The current...
Yeah, the state of brewing in Baltimore right now, and mainly focus on those four breweries. But it really was about how brewing started in Baltimore and how it, and, you know, how when it reached its peak and then how it petered out and it came back. And just really cool.
And that was interesting, too, because, like, I mean, I'm not from Baltimore, but now that, you know, we live in the suburbs here, it was, you know, really interesting to hear the rich history of beer in Baltimore, because we do live in a really interesting... Mm-hmm. You know, like at one time they had, Baltimore had like 40 breweries.
Yeah, a little bit over 40 breweries in the city of Baltimore, which is really crazy to think about.
And then some of the like historical buildings that are still in existence and being used today and how they used to be utilized for brewing with like the towers for the different grains and... Really interesting.
There were a few people in the film who were talking, but to me, the most most interesting person was Maureen O'Pray. She was a historian who I believe has written a book about beer, the beer industry in Baltimore. I don't know what the name of that book is. I didn't look it up or anything, but she was really interesting. Look it up, Maureen O'Pray, and she was fascinating whenever she was on the screen. She's very passionate, you could tell, about the topic. She was very enthusiastic when she was talking. She used a lot of hand gestures, which was engaging, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, you want to hear people enthusiastically talk about the content. You don't want them to just be like, oh, yeah, so this happened and that happened. She was into it, and she was just really excited to share her knowledge about brewing in Baltimore and the history of it.
I mean, I'm not... Carlin's more into, like, history than I am. I find history sometimes boring. But she really absolutely made it really engaging, and I wouldn't say I was on the edge of my seat, but it was a story. It was
enough to keep your interest.
Absolutely.
Well, and the other thing is, I think that Digital Cave Media, you know, Nick, Matt, and Kurt, who had been on two podcasts here, they did a very good job with the film in every facet. You know, the filming was really well done. The camera work was good. The way they edited it together, they had some graphics in it here and there that were really well done. You know, everything flowed well.
I love the music.
Yeah, the music was very well done. Very well done. So overall, I think we both enjoyed it. I think I enjoyed it more because of the history aspects of it.
Yeah.
I kind of do... I do wish that maybe it was a little bit longer, because I would...
Really?
Yeah, because I would like a little extra information about... the current breweries.
Oh, see, I was thinking it could be like it could have been a smidge shorter, but that also could have been, we watched it on a weeknight, and I'm
it's
like
a Thursday night.
Yeah, and I'm like an old fart and like to go to bed early, and it was like a little past my bedtime.
Yeah. Well, let's get into the first beer, and then we can talk a little bit more about whatever we feel in the film. The first beer is by Union Brewing, which up until a few weeks ago, I hadn't had anything by Union Brewing. And the first thing I had from them was their Duck Pin Pale Ale, which, Rebecca, you drank one of those at the screening.
And I loved it.
Yeah, she was a big fan of it. I think it's a solid pale ale, you know, but in all fairness, when I'm drinking a pale ale, what I'm usually looking for is more citrusy floral notes to it.
Well, that's
something
just
closer to an IPA, but...
That's just your style.
Yeah, but when I drank it, I could recognize that it is a well-done pale ale.
Yeah, and for myself, I'm just... Again, venturing into some of the hoppy stuff. So that was perfect right up my alley. And it was in a can, which, again, I think is sometimes fun, depending on where you're drinking, to have that option to have that can. So
yeah. And Union does all their beers in cans. So the beer that we have from them is called Balt, as in short for Baltimore. It is an alt beer style. And
it's-
So
clever.
Yeah,
Balt.
It is. I did some research on the style of the alt, but honestly, then I looked at the can and I'm like, they have it written perfectly, so I'll just read the can. This German-style alt beer is our nod to an old-world, old-school ale. The word alt is German for old, and refers to the traditional style of brewing before lager yeast was discovered. Balt is a dark copper-colored beer with a creamy head, a gentle bitterness, and a clean, dry finish. Prost, hun. And they put the old.
Oh, that's funny. So, like, the German mixed with the Baltimore culture.
Yep. I'll crack this sucker open. Pour a little bit for the both of us. So, never had this one before. And interestingly enough, just recently, within the last week, this beer won bronze medal for the alt beer style at the World Beer Cup in Denver, Colorado. So this is a now an award-winning beer. So pretty cool to have it here. And two of the guys from Union, two of the main guys who started Union Brewing, were in the film. Kevin Blodger and John Zarevitz, I believe is how his last name is said. So
let's really smell this. I don't know. It's like kind of nondescript nose.
It smells lagery, like pilsnery.
Yeah.
It's a little hay on the nose to me. The color definitely is like it says.
It's the copper.
Yeah. It's like a dark amber copperish. It's definitely got like the hay notes of very hay-like.
Once again, as per usual with Carlin and I, he gives me one swallow in my glass.
We'll go ahead and take some more.
I know. I took like
one. You can
one,
pour your own if you want.
Yeah. I took one sip and like all my beer was gone.
I didn't know how much you're playing. This is super clean.
Yeah, it's kind of, I mean, it's to me, the nose is nondescript and the taste is a little nondescript.
It is, but that's...
That's the style.
Yeah, yeah. I believe that's kind of what the style is. It's supposed to be a light, crisp type beer. And I don't really get any, like, offensive flavors in there.
No.
As I taste it, I get, you know, your typical beer flavor. I get a little bit of malt characteristic to it. And, you know...
I mean, it's really I do get easy a little to bit, drink.
Yeah, I do get a little bit of the hay that I was talking about in the nose. Super easy to drink. You can put this back really fast.
I could drink this like water.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you could drink this fast.
And what's the... I think it's only 5... What is it, 5.5%?
The more I drink it, actually...
5.6.
I get some very, very, very light notes of like... A little bit of like a carameliness, a little vanilla-y.
I was going to say a little caramel. I get that yeast flavor too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely coming through. That is a very easy drinking beer right there.
Yeah. But it still has flavor, you know?
Yeah. I think that's the type of beer that I would just reach for if I'm going to be outside.
Yeah.
And I want, like, a craft beer. Or if I just want to sip on something and I don't want too much. I want a ton of flavor and I don't want a ton of body. I want something that tastes good and it's crisp and light. And
yeah, you don't want to, you know, if you're drinking something, you know, it's not going to overpower anything you're eating. Again, it's one of those beers you can take to a party and would kind of appease the masses.
Yeah, definitely. So, the content for Union in the documentary, you know, it really
was my favorite.
Go ahead and say why.
Well, for me, it was one of the opening scenes it was just my favorite part of the whole movie, actually. Well, documentary. Okay, whatever. When the brewer is walking in and
I believe it's Kevin Blodger.
That's the
brewer. From Union. Yeah.
And I don't know. It's just like the music and like him walking in and
it's, you know, it's cool because it's like, here's this guy just going to work,
yeah,
you know, but we're going to follow him. And he's just really like kind of nonchalant about it. And he's like, yeah, I'm just going to work. But it's cool to see.
Yeah. That it's just his job.
Like, yeah. And you know, it's funny though, too, because you know, with the celebrity build up around the craft beer community, and there is a lot, you know, you think about big names like brewers like Vinny Lacerzo from Russian River, you know, Greg Cook from, you know, Sam Adams, you know, people like that. you know, people know these. Oh, I'm sorry. Greg Cook is from Stone Brewing.
Oh.
It's Jim Cook from Sam Adams.
I was like, wait
sorry.
A minute.
Both Cook, both spelled the same way. Sorry. So you think about like the celebrity of it, and then you watch this documentary, and you know it's a smaller brewery, mm-hmm. and here's this guy just like going into work, and it's just like this like brick building on the outside. He goes in, and it just looks like an industrial building.
Yeah, it looks
on
like
the
a
inside.
Warehouse or something. He's got his little like beanie hat on that. It says Union on it, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a Union.
But, like, at the time, you don't know who he is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's just this guy, and, like, I don't know. It was a cool scene.
So, like, is he the security guard there?
Or, like, you didn't even know.
Is he just, like,
the...
opening up shop and then leaving?
Yeah.
Is he going to brew something? Like, is he canning? Like, what's
he
doing?
Is he the owner? Like, you have no idea.
Yeah.
And
then they introduce the guys, and they talk. And, you know, I thought it was cool to hear from the Union guys from the perspective of starting up.
Right.
Because they're the newest of the people that are in the film. I think they're like maybe a year old or so, maybe a little bit over a year. But they, you know, they had an interesting perspective just saying, you know, hey, you know, we're new and this is what it's been like for us to get going and this is what beer means to us.
Well, it was neat because like is it the owner? Is that what you would call him?
Who? John? Servitz,
yeah.
Or Kevin Blodger. I mean, they're both...
Are they both own it?
Yeah, yeah, okay. They own it. And there's another guy that owns it with him. Banesh is his last name. I don't
know. Okay. Well, I just thought it was interesting because it was just, you know, he was just saying, this is what I wanted to do, but I needed a brewer. And then the brewer's like, I was looking to get out of... Was he from Chicago? Or... I don't know.
Maybe. I don't remember that.
But, he was like, I was looking to make a change, and it was funny how it all just kind of came together.
Yeah, and then... Didn't one of them basically say that, like, they knew someone who had designed breweries before, so they were like, hey, you want to design a brewery?
Yeah, it was just interesting to see how it all came together. And plus, I just thought they were really funny.
Yeah, yeah, they definitely had a really cool, fun dynamic. Like, you can tell that they have a good time brewing.
Yeah.
And that's one of the best things. And I don't know, it's cool because they gave you this whole idea that, like, to them... Brewing is about sharing something that they enjoy with the masses. Well, masses is in people in the Baltimore area because it's not distributed very far. But, you know, just sharing what they love with people who can appreciate it and just having a good time with each other and being like, hey, we're buddies and we're, you know, working together and this is our life. Like, we don't have to sit at some desk job and hate ourselves for doing that. Like, we're living the way we want to live. And that's one of the cool messages that I picked up behind mm-hmm. that. You know, it wasn't right in your face, but that's what I picked up on.
Yeah.
It was really cool. So.
Okay.
The Balt alt beer, nice beer. Good way to start. Crisp. Nice. We're then going to move on to the Heavy Seas beer that we chose for the evening, and that's their Powder Monkey Pale Ale. Which I've had a bunch of Heavy Seas beers before. Anyone who's a longtime listener will remember that their double IPA, barrel aged double IPA, the Big Dipper, was a serious contender for the title of the show, the Master Brewer Lord title. So,
it just went into head to head competition. It never,
yeah,
oh, okay.
Yeah. It went head to head with the Racer Bear 5. Republic Racer 5. Racer 5. And it lost to the Racer 5, but it's basically right there as the number two on our show. So.
Yeah, number one is still Racer 5.
Correct.
Okay. Yep. Jeez, that's been a long time.
Why don't you listen to the show?
I know. I just pour the beers.
Yeah. So we picked the Powder Monkey Pale Ale. I have not had this. I've had a lot of Heavy Seas beers, but I picked this one mainly because I wanted to try it because I've never had it before. And this was one of the ones they were serving at the event. Yes, they had the Powder Monkey there. Also, the Balt by Union was there. We actually took that can from there. We smuggled it out.
I didn't open it. I just put it in my purse.
Yeah, she was very covert about it. It's all good. So, Heavy Seas is probably one of the most important breweries in the Baltimore area right now because, especially for the area, Hugh Sisson, who's the founder, is a big name in beer around here. He has done a lot for furthering beer legislation in the state, and because he's been in it for so long, and he's been doing it since sometime in the I believe early 90s, people have been very like super aware of who he is. originally they were Clipper City Brewing, and then they did Heavy, when they did Heavy Seas was just a more craft beer line of beers that they were doing, because as Clipper City, they were mainly doing just like golden ales and lagers, you know, like very simple style beers that could appeal to people who like, you know, like Budweiser and Coors and Miller and stuff. And then they decided to get more into the craft stuff. So they did, I remember one of the first ones, a Saison Red Sky at Night, which was the first Saison I ever had, and I really enjoyed it. You know, and they did like Small Craft Warning, which was an Uber Pilsner is what they call that. So they did all these new ones, and they just said that they were in the Heavy Seas line of Clipper City. And then it came to a point where they just decided, okay, you know, we want to be known as just like doing craft beer. We want to go full force craft beer. So I think we need to drop the Clipper City, which associates us with the gold and the lager beers and all that. So they just decided to rebrand as Heavy Seas. And that's how Heavy Seas came to be. So it was basically two different companies. Same company, but going by two different names at different times. So Heavy Seas, yes, Hugh Sisson was in the film. And one of the great things about Hugh Sisson is he's very comfortable talking on screen. And he has a lot to say. And he's got a lot of experience. So what he is saying is very valuable.
Mm-hmm. He's very eloquent.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He definitely knew what he was talking about. But talk a little bit more about that after we look at the beer.
Sniff and swirl.
Looks like your typical pale ale. You know, has the same goldenish, brownish gold hue to it. You know, it's not hazy or anything. You can see right through it. As far as pale ales go,
it's exactly what you would expect, I think.
It's on the maltier side of a pale ale on the nose. Not really. I don't perceive a lot of hops. I don't perceive much hops, honestly. I perceive a lot more malts, for sure.
I don't know what to make of this.
It's very effervescent. A lot of carbonation to it. I'm going to be honest. I don't really get barely any hops.
No, I know. I was like, I would never guess this is a pale ale.
The malt notes to it are nice, though.
Yeah.
But I don't think I'd be able to pick this out as a pale.
No. If I put this in the lineup, you would never guess it's a pale. What would you say it is?
I'm going to be honest. It tastes a little bit, minus the strong hay notes, it's kind of similar to the malt.
I was going to say the same thing. It does. I mean, I like it. I think I like this a little better than the malt.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, I could see that. Well, you know what? I'm going to say no, in my opinion. That's fine if that's,
I'm sticking to it.
Okay. I like the malt more, and I'll tell you why. Because of the slight vanilla-y and caramel-y notes that I get in the malt, that's a really nice finish.
Mm-hmm.
With the Powder Monkey, I just kind of get a drying of my tongue in the finish, which is probably from, whatever the ABV is on it. I'm sure it's on here somewhere. There's so many places they can hide it. It's actually not on here. They don't have the alcohol by volume. Interesting. But it's a kind of a mundane pale ale, in my opinion. Well crafted for being a more malty pale ale, though. So one of the cool things in the documentary about Heavy Seas was they were talking to Hugh Sisson basically about his take on how he views competition with the big guys, you know, like Budweiser and, you know, Miller, Coors and all that. And he was portraying it as just like this kind of like knockdown, drag out fight that you have to persist in. And in order to, you know, keep craft beer going, you know, anyone who's interested in craft beer who is involved in craft beer has to do their best to fight the good fight and battle against Anheuser-Busch and Miller Coors, because they're trying to, you know, cut into the profits of craft brewers and actually trying to eliminate them altogether sometimes. So I thought that was interesting.
Which is going to lead you right
It leads you
into our next brewery that we're going
to
talk about.
Yeah, 100% to the next one, which is Stillwater Artisanal Ales. And their owner, founder, brewer, Brian Strumke.
Totally different approach and thoughts than Hugh Sisson.
They juxtaposed what Hugh Sisson said about the big boys versus craft beer with Brian Strumke's thought about it, which basically was, who gives a shit? Just do your own thing. Yeah, he was basically looking at it as, you know, do what you want to do when you want to do it, make whatever beer, nothing's macro, nothing's micro.
It just kind of is what it is.
Yeah, it's just everyone like doing beer. But the thing I would say, Brian Strumke strikes me as, one, a very passive person, probably a very nice person, I would assume.
He's a very artistic and intellectual.
Right. Very existential.
Yes, yes.
Which is like, interesting because one of his first beers was called Existent. And he is very existential about the beers he makes, which is one really, really interesting thing about him. But
he's the nomadic brewer, too.
Yes, he is a nomadic, or as people call him, gypsy brewers. He doesn't have a main location that he brews in, but we'll talk a little bit more about his view on things in a little bit. Okay, so we're going to try a beer that we've actually had by them, or by him, Stillwater, Mr. Brian Strumke. It's a dark saison, called a saison darkly, appropriately enough, and we've had this before, but
it's been a while.
Yeah, we've also had it sitting in the fridge for a while, so I hope it's still good.
Carlin and I are both very partial to Stillwater because they do so many different styles of saisons, and they're all so different and so interesting. They have the most interesting ingredients in them, and
yeah, all of Brian Strumke's saisons are very, very different.
Mm-hmm.
He's always got some sort of interesting take on what he wants to do, which was really cool because that came through in the film.
Oh, yeah.
He would talk about basically like he just kind of like, it's like, I want to make beer, but I don't want to just make beer. I want to make interesting beer. I want to make basically existential beer is what he's making. He's like, he wants people to really think. And I agree because when we first, he has a restaurant called Of Love and Regret, and
I don't know if it's...
He's part owner.
Part owner.
Yeah, he's part owner of Love and Regret, so they serve...
The beer.
Mainly Stillwater beer. And they're all variations of saisons. Well, when we first went there, I was in the mode of, I didn't really care for saisons that much because I was more in, like, the hoppy beer mode, which I usually am anyway, and less into, like, oh, you know, saisons, they're very light and they're weedy. But we went there, and I tried a bunch of stuff, and I didn't have a single beer there that I disliked, and it made me rethink saisons. But the interesting thing is, since then, I've had other saisons, and no saisons stand out the way that Stillwater saisons stand out. Brian Strumke has magic fingers.
Yeah,
he works some sort of crazy magic on these saisons, and I think it's because he doesn't approach them as just like, this is a saison, this is what it has to be. He approaches it as, here's a base of what I know how to do, and I'm just going to create on top of the base.
He's a very creative individual, and he, correct me if I'm wrong, was a musician in a band?
No, he was a DJ.
He was a DJ.
Yeah.
And
made his own music.
Decided to kind of then go into the beer, and really he uses, I mean, that's his creative outlet, you know. It's definitely an art form for him.
Yeah he definitely views it that way. So let's talk about it. I mean, this has a significant head to it, first of all, and it's a little tan on the head. You can see through it around the edges. It's brownish in the edges, but if you try to look straight through it, it's very, very dark.
There's a little red to it.
Yeah. Oh god, the nose is good. Yeah.
I don't even know how to, I'm terrible with this. You know, I don't even, like, what would you even call that?
I mean, it smells like a saison, but it smells darker. It smells like there's malt to it, which, you know, typically you're not thinking significant malt in saisons, but, you know, dark saison, And actually, all my experiences with dark saisons are from Stillwater, because the very first one I had was a smoked dark saison. I think it was the Perfect Crime, and it was a collaboration of Stillwater, Stone Brewing, and Evil Twin. And I was like, oh my god, like, dark saison, I never even heard of that. That's awesome. And then the second one I had was this, a saison darkly. And I don't think I've had another one since, or even heard of anyone else who does them.
Well, I still love this beer.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
So, I don't...
That's good. It's got these nice, like, fruity notes to the finish.
It's like, I don't know, it's like a comfort beer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it kind of like you have your comfort foods that you eat or, you know, eat or drink when you want to feel better.
Yeah.
I feel like this could be the beer for that.
It's finishing a bit astringent for me. It is 8% alcohol by volume.
Really? I don't get that at all.
It's a little astringent to me in the finish, but it's not detracting from it too much.
No.
But yeah, like I said, you know, it's like tasting a Saison, which has like that upfront weediness with some like fruit notes on the finish, but it's also got a bit of a malt backbone, which you typically don't get in Saisons. And that's really good on the mouthfeel as well as just the flavor in general.
Yeah.
Your thoughts? You still loving it, huh?
I love it. It's...
Yeah. Just like fruity... There's floral notes. There are nice floral notes to the finish, too. Okay. Not the same floral notes that you get from, like, a bunch of hops. It's more of, like, a delicate
floral. Well, like, for me, you know, I love my stouts and porters, but I feel like those are more my winter beers. You know, and then you have, like, your summer beers, which I typically like more my light beers. You know, I'll have some wheats or some pale ales, but I feel like this is, like, something you could definitely easily drink year-round.
You know,
it has like the light qualities, but also because it's more malty and it's darker, I feel like it has those, I don't know.
I was going to say that for me personally, I view this as a perfect autumn beer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If I because had to pick a season.
It's that in between, you know, like it's, you're just coming off of it being hot from summer and it's getting a little bit cooler. And to me, this represents in the middle. Because the light weediness of a Saison versus the dark malts, it's kind of like going from hot to cold season.
Yeah, I hear you. I do think it's still...
I think Brian Strumke would be proud of me saying that, because it's a very, like, creative...
Oh. You know?
I'm just saying. Brian Strumke, if you hear this, please be proud of me for that.
Whatever.
I feel like I want to hang out with Brian Strumke, because I could really get into some awesome existential talk.
I just think he was the one, you know, after the film, Carl and I were like, he definitely was not, like, the most comfortable on camera.
Oh, no.
Like, you can tell he just wants to do his thing, and...
Yeah. He's definitely not an ideal person to interview. Not because of what he does, but because he's just not comfortable on film.
Maybe he was, I don't know. He just wants to do his thing.
The way he came off in the documentary as being, you know, tough to interview, we came out and I said, I bet they had to cut a lot of footage.
just
to get what they had of him. But he had a lot of really cool things to say in the film. I will say that he's probably done psychotropic drugs in his life.
What makes you say that?
Because he's got that, like, semi-spaced out persona that people who are existential who have done psychotropic drugs before. Plus, he was a DJ. I mean, come on.
Well, that's stereotypical.
Yeah, it is. I don't care. I'm just throwing it out there.
I'm already thinking about how many beers I can put in Untappd.
Oh, yeah, because Rebecca's finally on Untappd, everyone.
Yeah.
Let's clap for that.
Yeah. Carlin kept bugging me. I was like, I don't really understand the point, but whatever. But now I find it fun to, like, earn my little badges.
Exactly. Rewards involved with it, which is, you know, could be dangerous, could encourage alcoholism.
It could. Okay.
Let's go on to the final one. The final one is a beer by Brewer's Art, and Brewer's Art was started by... Volker Stewart, and
How do you remember all these names?
I don't know, because it's beer. I mean, I'm very good at remembering what I'm interested in.
So, Carlin has no notes. Anything he's talked about right now during this podcast, no notes, all in his head.
I cram, you know? I try to remember.
That's weird.
So, Volker Stewart is the founder, and he's the head brewer at Brewer's Art. And Brewer's Art's been around for a very long time, as far as the newer breweries go in Baltimore. Has its own brew pub location, which we've actually never been to, but Rebecca's brought it up a few times.
We need to go.
Everybody talks about their beer Resurrection, but as people remember, Resurrection was on our show and we trashed it. It didn't do so well. But
you trash a lot of beers, though.
Well, yeah. First off, we trash a lot of beers. Second off, Sean Creel let us know that apparently Brewer's Art does not brew at their regular location for the beers that get canned and sold at liquor stores. That apparently, I think they contract with like Sly Fox that operates just outside of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and they brew there and can the Brewer's Art beers and ship them out. So that's what Sean said. And he said that may be part of the reason for, you know, the beer not tasting as good, because he swears that Resurrection on tap at Brewer's Art Brew Pub is really good.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have to go and check that out.
Which is maybe why Kyle always loves it so much.
Yeah, you know.
Because sometimes, you know, you have your favorite beer, you have it on tap, and in your mind it's like awesome. And mm-hmm. Then even when you drink it out of a can, even though it's not as good, because you have that memory, it was so amazing.
Yeah.
It's still very amazing.
Preconceived notions can do a lot.
Yeah. Which is so, you know, interesting on how you guys hate on so many beers because you have no idea what it is, you know? Well, so you eliminate that.
We're being cautious. We're hating on everything so that
we don't
accidentally let something crappy get by.
Yeah. Okay. So we are going to be drinking Ozzy.
Yeah. They're Ozzy, which is a Belgian strong ale. And strong ales, the Belgian style strong ale, typically what they do to make it higher in alcohol, which is why it's called strong ale, they'll add candied sugars.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they add candied sugars to the beer during fermentation to basically add more food for the yeast to create a higher alcohol volume. Usually where you're getting the sugars from are the malts, but they want a lighter flavor. For these strong ales, so they're adding the candied sugar so that you're not also adding all the, you know, darker, roastier flavors from the malt to the beer as well. So this is that style of beer, and when I say Ozzy, most people probably think of Ozzy Osbourne, and yes, it was basically modeled after Ozzy Osbourne. The can, and we got one of probably the last grouping of cans that are going to be available because they got in trouble.
I took this one, didn't I?
No,
we bought that one.
Purchased this one.
What? I thought I brought him two cans.
You brought a can of Resurrection home, but I said I don't want to try Resurrection on here because we already trashed it. I want to do something different, I've been wanting to try the Ozzy. So, but
I saw a whole bunch of Ozzy at Wine World when I was just there.
Well, it's going to be gone at some point, and when it's gone, it's gone. I mean, they'll still be putting the beer out, but they're not going to have the same packaging, because the packaging has a fist coming out that has Ozzy printed on the knuckles, just like Ozzy Osbourne has, and it's then got like an Argyle-style pattern with bats, with a head at one point and then without a head at another point.
Oh, really?
Referring to when Ozzy Osbourne bit the head off a bat.
Wait, where's the head?
On a stage. Is it head right there? And then no head there, but a blood drop because the head's missing. So
I would have not picked that up.
So this is a clear...
I just thought it was really a really pretty design.
It is. It looks really cool. But this is a clear reference to Ozzy Osbourne, and I'm actually surprised it took so long. But within probably about a month... between 1 and 2 months ago, Volker Stewart got a cease and desist from Ozzy's folks saying you can't call the beer Ozzy anymore and you can't have these cans because it's
why can't they call it Ozzy?
Well, the thing is,
I'm sure they can, right? They just have to change the packaging.
Well, if Ozzy, the name Ozzy is trademarked, then no, they can't.
What if, I mean, could I trademark Rebecca?
Could, if a court of law would allow it. That's the thing. You know, you have to figure out if it would be allowed. There are generic things, like nobody can trademark the word the.
Right.
Like, it's just absurd. But there are certain things, like Ozzy isn't that common. So I'm not sure if he fully has it trademarked or not. But because of the packaging, it is a clear, clear, clear reference to Ozzy Osbourne, which is a no-no because right. he is a brand. So he has himself trademarked, yeah. basically. So at the very least, they might be able to keep the name. At the very least, they have to change the packaging. So when that came out that they got the cease and desist and they're going to have to change things, people started trying to buy as much of these cans as they could. So maybe I should keep this can after we're done with it.
Well, I know when I was Collector's at Wine World, item. I know when I saw a bunch of them at Wine World, I was like, should I buy these? Or will they be worth money?
Actually, they probably would at some point. I wouldn't be surprised if they become worth money. Oh, I'm sorry. A Belgian strong pale ale is what this is. I remember that as soon as I started pouring it because it is very pale in coloration.
It looks like urine.
It does look like urine. It's very light straw color to it. It's got a lot of white fluffy head to it.
I mean, it's kind of like what your urine should not look like, though.
But not the worst.
No, I mean, you're on your way to dehydration if your urine is this color, though.
On the way. It's got a lot of... It actually kind of smells very Saison-y. I mean, it's obviously a Belgian style. Light Belgian.
Like lemon peel.
Yes. Actually, great pick on that.
Really?
Definitely lemon peel in there. It's very lemon peely. You get that little banana-y note that you typically get with a Belgian style.
Point for Rebecca.
Yeah. Point for you. Little medicinal.
I don't like type this. Note.
It's got a bit of an aspirin-y finish to it. You definitely get that typical Belgian yeast flavor up front.
I'm gonna be honest. Sometimes the Belgian yeast flavor makes me nauseous.
Yeah, I could see that.
Like, I don't even know how to describe it. I mean, I could see why people like this.
It is very distinct, and I think sometimes it has a tendency to give it what I was describing as an aspirin-type finish to a beer. A little bitter.
Yeah.
Bitter and chalky, kind of, in your mouth.
Which is so funny, because, you know, this is... A couple years ago, I would have loved this beer.
Yeah. I don't hate this beer.
No, I don't hate it. It's just...
I don't love it either. Like,
I don't need to drink it again.
Yeah, it's... I feel the same way. It's very aspirin-y to me, so.
I mean, I think, again, if you're, this could be someone's gateway beer into the craft beer world. I do think that.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You know, like, mine was Trogs Dreamweaver, you know, the Hoegaarden. I feel like it's, you know, in that, although Dreamweaver is much better than this. I feel like, you know, it definitely could appeal to some people. It's just not your thing.
But I will say that Volker Stewart in the film was a really cool guy to have in there because he's been a part of the craft beer community in Baltimore for so long, and he had a lot of interesting things to expound upon. One of the best things in what he talked about, in my opinion, was just like a little kind of fun story that he told about trying to get his brewing equipment into this building that's his brew pub.
It's an old historical building in Baltimore, which is beautiful.
Yeah, and they basically found out that they couldn't get it to where he wanted it to be because of the beam, like some metal beam structure in there that they couldn't do anything about because of, I think it was load bearing or something. So they had to take all the equipment apart and then take it through and then reassemble it. And apparently it was like some giant pain in the ass. But and then they showed a lot of him, you know, going around and checking on his beers and stuff. Mm-hmm. And just talking about like his building, which is a really cool looking building. Oh, yeah. So which makes me want to go there even more and check out these beers to see if they are in fact much better on tap.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I've spoken about the Resurrection before. I really don't like it, and I'm not enjoying the Aussie so much either. It's not terrible, but I'm Yeah, I wouldn't go back to it. But and yeah. I am getting some aftertaste, a little apple-y aftertaste to this beer.
I don't know. My mouth tastes terrible.
Nice. But I appreciate what Volker Stewart has done for the craft beer community here, because there are a lot of people who started getting into craft beer because of Brewer's Art. Oh,
absolutely.
And that's very admirable. And he seems like a really nice guy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, that's the thing. Everyone,
they all were, like, so interesting and nice, really, and nice. All had their own struggles and accomplishments, and it was just, everyone had their own unique story, and it was just interesting.
Yeah. I think it's important for you listeners to keep in mind that when we trash a beer, or we say we're just not interested in it, that has no bearing on how we feel about the actual brewery necessarily, or the people doing the brewing, because, you know, I know there are people out there who I would love to hang out with and who I think are really cool and really awesome people, but I just don't enjoy their beers. And at the moment, Brewer's Art is that, but I think we have to give them...
Well, you only had two of their beers, though.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You didn't let me finish. Oh, I was about to say, that's why I need to go to the brew pub and see if what Sean was saying is accurate and that it is much better on tap. And they'll have other stuff
there. Apparently they have a lot of beers on tap. And everybody says the bar part is totally different than the restaurant part.
Yes.
And has a really different feel. So
yeah.
I can't wait to go. We just have to find time.
We'll make it. Actually, I do want to correct myself. I've had three of their beers.
What was the other one?
The Ozzy, the Resurrection, and we had their Peppercorn Triple, which I hated. So in bottles and cans, not a good track record, but we'll check it out and report back about how it is.
Be another episode.
Yeah. So overall, the Brewmore Baltimore documentary was really good. Mm-hmm. I know that after we had the screening that we went to, they had another screening, and that screening was actually in the Heavy Seas Brewery. They just put up like a big screen and projected. I bet that was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So I hope they sold that out. I don't know if they did or not, but I hope so. The film is, you know, a lot better than I even thought it would be. I thought it would be a good film, but coming away from it, I was very impressed. It exceeded my expectations greatly. And I'm going to be honest, if it's available for purchase at some point, I would definitely buy it.
Yeah. Well, I definitely think it has a lot of rewatch value, too.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's so rich in history, and you know, some of the scenes go a little fast. You're like, oh wait, what was that, or who was that, or oh, and so I would definitely watch it again.
Very cool. So of the four beers we had tonight, can you rank them for me? Say your favorite to your least favorite. I think I know what your favorite is and what your least favorite is. I just don't know where the other ones fall in there.
So I would go the Stillwater Saison Darkly
as your number one.
Yeah. Then the Heavy Seas Pale Ale.
The Powder Monkey.
Oh, what did I call it?
Just the Heavy Seas Pale Ale. It's Powder Monkey.
Punky Monkey, I am. So
nice.
And then Union's Bolt. And then Ozzy.
I would say that my opinion is almost the exact same, but a little bit switched. And that is a Saison Darkly is number one. Union Brewing's Bolt is number two. The Powder Monkey Pale as three, and the Ozzy as four. So I think this has been a fun episode, an interesting one.
Definitely.
Thank you so much, Nick, Matt, Kurt, you Digital Cave Media folk for having us to the film.
Yes.
And Maureen O'Pray for, from what I understand, inspiring the idea and being very entertaining on the screen. And thank you, you know, Union Brewing, Heavy Seas, Stillwater Artisanal Ales, and Brewer's Art for doing what you do and greatly contributing to the Baltimore craft beer community. This has been a great episode. We'll, you know, obviously have some more special ones. Hopefully, we'll get invited to some more beer-related films. That would be fun.
Yeah, it would be fun.
This was a first for the podcast, so our first beer and movie review all in one. So thank you so much for listening. We're gonna go and fight over the rest of this Saison Darkly. and thanks so much. Hope you listen to the next episode. Paralyzed. Why not go?
This has been a Nerd Circle podcast production.